Second hour here, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106 through the game. In the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Joe Rexford here, Paul Kaharski in for Robbie Stanley.
You've got to check out Nashville Grass 365, particularly if your dogs are digging up the grass or rolling in the mud. You should consider a play area, turf play area with superior drainage. Head to NashvilleGrass365.com for more info.
And Robbie and Rex are presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team to see why they are referred so often. Always a major treat to talk to our next guest. And Paul, I know you have known John a lot longer than I have. It's been great to get to know him. It's always wonderful to talk to him. John McClain, SportsRadio610.com in Houston, a longtime NFL reporter. John, how the heck are you today?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Great. We're good. I'm dealing, you know, handling Kaharski here for about a week of shows with him. So, you know, you got to be on your toes, but we're having fun.
You got your hands full. I know that. I've known Paul since 1995.
Been a while, John. Hope you're well. Say hi to Carol. I know you're very absorbed in the Astros, but I will avoid one of my least favorite topics and ask you about how C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, two guys drafted at the very top for the Texans, are looking for Houston, and how hope is down there with D'Amico Ryans and crew.
First of all, when D'Amico was hired, he played here 6 years. He was always one of the most popular players in franchise history and one of the best, and they ended up trading him to Philadelphia because they didn't think he fit Wade Phillips's 3-4, so he played 4 more years. Then he entered coaching, and so every team that had an opening last year, 5 of them tried to get an interview with him. Only Denver did. He turned down the others, and when he was hired here, it created the most buzz for any coach since Gary Kubiak was brought back home in 2006. And the Texans have been really bad for 3 years. It seems like it's been 13 years, but in 2019, they won the division, beat Buffalo in a playoff, and then Bill O'Brien started to slide by trading DeAndre Hopkins in the second worst trade in Houston football history to the Oilers. Trading Hall of Fame strong safety Kenny Houston to Washington. So then they started to go down. O'Brien was fired after an 0-4 start. So people are pumped about having Ryans here. And then they had the second pick. They took Stroud. We figured they were going to take a quarterback. And I thought for the longest time it might be Bryce Young. And when they took Stroud, they had about 5,000 people on the draft night. Everybody cheered, and then they were shocked when general manager Nick Caserio traded back up into the third spot and took Anderson, the best defensive prospect in the draft. And so the defense is easier to learn for a rookie than the offense. D'Amico Ryans will call the defense. He has said, I don't want to slow Will Anderson Jr. down by having him think too much. Basically, it's going to be, well, ball is snapped, get the quarterback. He's got a chance to be the first Texan to have double-digit sacks since J.J. Watt had 16 in 2018. And then Stroud, they brought him along rotating with Davis Mills, the starter of the last 2 years. And I know they wanted him to separate himself, separate from Mills. And Case Keenum was signed for his third tour of duty here. And I still think when a team has a quarterback who gets hurt, there's a good chance Mills could be traded because you don't need Case Keenum to be the emergency quarterback. And so Anderson has done great. He's hit the weights. He's up to 260 from 250 at Alabama. And then Stroud, they named him as the starter this week. They play at New England tonight, go against Billy O, as they call him up there, Bill O'Brien. And Stroud's had ups and downs as all rookies. But going back to last week, second week of camp, he really did separate himself. And one thing you do in that situation, when you have a veteran starter, you don't want to just hand the job to a rookie. Carolina didn't have that problem because their new backup is Andy Dalton, a veteran who came in the same time as Bryce Young. So last week, Stroud had a great week of practice. Now we'll see how much they play him against the Patriots.
So, John, we had a we were talking earlier about John Robinson and, you know, what might be next for him, and kind of stumbled on this question, which I don't think I'd ever really considered this before. But why do you think that coaches get second and third chances so much easier than GMs in this league? Because we were trying to come up with guys who had had a second chance. You know, someone texted me, you know, Trent Baalke is a guy in a second chance.
But Rick Spielman got a second chance.
But it's certainly a pretty significant difference. Why do you think that is, John?
There's a lot of former general managers in the media, and Floyd Reese being one, and the late Floyd Reese. And so I asked a former general manager with NFL Network that question this week. I said, why is it you guys don't get second chances? He said, because general managers get blamed for the team, the record, and the personnel. The coach only gets blamed for the record. And so there's a chance with better personnel, the coach is going to get a second chance and do a better job. And we've seen a long list of that. The most prominent to me is Bill Belichick, who did a terrible job at Cleveland. Then he got hired in New England just to stick it to Bill Parcells, started off with a terrible record. Now he's been the best coach in history. Marv Levy, 98 years old, in Canton last week. Marv couldn't win with the Chiefs, where he actually tried to run the single wing offense at times, goes to Buffalo and goes to four Super Bowls. And when the Texans hired Charlie Casserly as their first general manager, he'd been the GM in Washington, so he got a second chance. But that's the best explanation I've heard. You get blamed for the losing on the field, and you get blamed for the personnel.
Rick, we're quick, unfortunately, John, but how do you stack the AFC South looking at it at this point?
I believe that everybody has Jacksonville running away with the division. I'm not so sure. Titans have a great coach in Mike Vrabel. They got a good staff. They got a great running back. They can pound the ball in the last year of his contract. And they were 500 last year with Tannehill. Tannehill's got to stay healthy. And I think with that defense, they will challenge Jacksonville, and Houston and Indianapolis will challenge for third place.
John McClain, as always, my friend, great talking to you, and we will catch up with you soon before we get to the season. Thanks so much, John.
Appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thanks, Joe and Paul. Y'all have a great season.
Thanks, John. On the guest line there, always great to talk to him, and we're gonna get a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to have Jack Gibbons, Titans, right now, starting inside linebacker. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 of the game. All right, welcome back in. Robbie Rexler, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Joe Rexler, Paul Garhusky, Nick Kieser. And we're happy to welcome in our next guest. We go from John to Jack. John McClain to Jack Gibbons, Titans second-year linebacker. Jack, thanks for joining us today. I know you got a busy day ahead. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Great to be here.
So right now, Jack, you've got a great opportunity, and it appears you're seizing the opportunity here with this defense. I know in a competition with Monty Rice, but it looks like, you know, you're obviously flourishing. I've talked to you some after practice about the certainty, the mental aspect of the game improving. Mike Vrabel talked the other day also about your physical improvement. What's been the big key, Jack, to you to go from last year undrafted free agent who was trying to make it in the NFL to now a guy who might be a starting linebacker on an NFL team?
Yeah, I think the biggest key for me has just been building my confidence up. When I was coming in as an undrafted free agent, it's kind of uncertain. You're kind of looking around, what's the NFL like? Where do I fit in on this team? And having been around for a year and gotten to play a little bit in games and stuff, I just feel a lot more confident this year. I know way more football than I did last year. My body feels better. And so just everything kind of building up to help me go out there and just play as free and relaxed as possible, and I feel like that's helped me a lot this year.
You've got some Mike Vrabel in you in terms of a smart diagnostician kind of thing. Do you see that he sees that? Like, is there any connection on that level, and how valuable has that been?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely high praise. I'll definitely take that, and that's something I try to emulate, is how well he knows the game and kind of can predict what teams are going to try to do to us, and kind of understanding scheme from that point of view. So definitely something I'm trying to do is absorb as much of that as I can from him and put it into my own game. So that's definitely helped, and it's awesome having a coach that has played in the league for so long and been around for so long. He can coach every position on the field, and that's, I feel like that's pretty rare. And so definitely try to absorb as much knowledge as I can from him.
Okay, Jack, so you're from, tell me if I say this wrong, Bolverde, Texas? Is that right?
I'm thinking Bolverde.
No, Bolverde.
Ah, damn, Bolverde. Okay, where in Texas is that?
San Antonio.
It's about 20 minutes north of San Antonio.
Okay, so Abilene Christian, you have a good career there, and then a grad transfer, rowing the boat up in Minnesota. How did that go? Like, how did the Minnesota opportunity materialize, and then how important was that year, in the Big Ten for you?
Yeah, for sure. I went to Abilene Christian out of high school. I didn't really have a bunch of offers. I had a couple of D2 offers, and they had offered me right before signing day, so I just jumped on it. I was the best offer I had, and I wanted to play football, so I just went up there, and I felt like I had a good career there. I loved my time there, but I kind of accomplished everything I wanted to there, and always a dream to playing at like a big time college football program, playing in like the Big Ten, the SEC, Big 12, something like that. So with COVID, I got an extra season and decided to just hop in the portal and see if I could go chase down that dream. It was honestly less to do with the NFL, just wanting to play on the big college football stage. And Minnesota came in and offered. It was a good opportunity, and I felt like the Big Ten really fit my style of play, and so I jumped on it right when they offered. I went ahead and committed and went up there and never looked back, and it was a great experience, the best decision I ever made, for sure.
So being from suburban San Antonio, I'm guessing you're a Spurs guy. If so, how much do you know about Victor Wembanyama, and how into this are you?
I mean, I'm ecstatic. In San Antonio, we don't have any other teams, so the Spurs is like all we have. And I grew up a huge Spurs fan, watching pretty much every game. Got to see 5 NBA championships. It was awesome. And we've been down for a few years, but last time we had the number 1 pick, it was Tim Duncan, and that one worked out. So we're all excited about Victor for sure.
Okay, so now I got to think back to, let's see, heartbreak for me was the 05 finals. Let's see, you only would have been about 7 years old. Do you remember that game? Like, it's game 7, the Pistons won game 6 in San Antonio, and then game 7, the fourth quarter. Yeah, that's probably a stretch to ask you to remember that one.
I don't remember much of the game, but I remember watching it at my cousin's house with my family there.
He remembers watching the parade, Joe.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, what, man. Rasheed Wallace lets Robert Horry just shoot a wide open 3. Oh, man, what a killer. So John, from our perspective on the sidelines, we had John McClain, and now we got Jack. I'm sorry, John.
I'm trying to teach him, Jack.
Oh, man, terrible. I botched it. It was going so well, too. So, Jack, we stand on the sidelines, obviously, for these open practices, and it looks to me like, you guys being one's defense is – are pretty much winning most days against the one's offense. I know it's not – you guys don't have, like, some scoreboard. I don't think you do on we won this day, they won that. And I know it's about getting each other work, but what is your perspective on that? I mean, would you agree with that? Do you feel like you are handling the offense? Do you feel like you're helping them improve? What's your perspective on, like, the work that you guys are getting and who's winning each day?
I feel like we've had great competition throughout camp, just kind of going back and forth. We may put together a good period, and then they'll come back and get us the next period. So I think it's been great competition. We've got great players up and down the roster on both sides, so it's been really good to compete against each other, and I feel like we're just making each other better. But, yeah, I think it's been a really competitive camp so far.
The speed and the shiftiness and the power of two key guys on offense, I'm wondering what it's like to cover and track Jay Spears and Chigakonkwo.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really cool about our offense, is that we have a lot of different types of guys, like the difference between Derek and Tajay, obviously, and then a tight end like Chig. And so getting to play against different body types, different styles of players every day in practice is, I think, super valuable, because it allows us to get ready for the season based off, we don't know what each team has different skill sets in their skill player room. So having that all that diversity on our team helps us out a lot for sure. Be prepared for those once we get to the season, because each of those guys is super different. And it's good to get that the reps in right now, covering different types of guys.
Are you expecting to play Saturday in Chicago, Jack?
I'm going to show up ready to play. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I don't make any decisions, but any chance I get to play, I'm excited to do so.
So it hasn't been communicated yet, whatever the plan. I know, well, what, Terrell Williams becomes head coach tomorrow, so I suppose a lot of things will be communicated then. What was the reaction? I know, obviously, the defensive line guys were really excited. It sounds like a lot of players in this team were said. What was your reaction when you heard about Terrell Williams, being head coach for this game?
Oh, super excited. Big T's awesome. He puts in so much work. He has great relationships with everyone on the team, and he definitely deserves this opportunity. I'm super excited for him. So we're all pumped.
Who do you
go out there and try to get the first win.
Who do you hang out with the most? Who's like your lunch partner, or if you're going to catch a movie with one of the guys, who's your pal?
Yeah, definitely hang out with a lot of the guys in the rookie class that came in with me, like Chance Campbell, Ryan Stonehouse, Kyle Phillips, those guys. I would say Ryan Stonehouse is probably the guy I've hung out with the most, especially this offseason. Both of us stayed in town in Tennessee, so we spent a lot of time together, so that was good.
Jack, obviously you guys are you're trying to get better every day. I mean, you're in a position battle. It's trying to be a very tight focus, but you also know your first opponent. Like, do you sneak any, even just on your own, glances at the Saints? Is there any sort of mindset of looking at that game, thinking about that game at this point, or is it too early for that yet?
I mean, it's hard to not at least think about it, but as far as looking into it, really diving into film and stuff, where I'm not really doing that yet, trying to focus one day at a time, work on getting better at practice today, and then getting ready for this Chicago game, and then take it one day at a time. It's kind of early to look too far ahead, but it's obviously hard to not think about what it's going to be like when we go down there to New Orleans.
We peek at the Bears much or hardly at all?
Yeah, I've been looking a little bit. I mean, it's hard to know what they're going to come out and do in the preseason. People don't want to show a lot. You don't know who's going to play and stuff like that. But just trying to look into their personnel a little bit, watch a little bit of their preseason games from last year, see what kind of plays we might get. Not really sure what's going to happen. It's definitely more primarily focused on us in the preseason, but definitely like to look a little bit just to kind of get a feel for who we're playing against.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Jack, there's such a massive difference, right? Like in a preseason week, you guys are trying to work, like you said, work on yourselves. You're trying to execute what you want to do with your defense. You've been through this before. You've been through preseason games, the regular season games. The regular season game is obviously game plan heavy, right? And it's matchups and it's drilling down extensively on the opponent. Give us an idea of the difference between a preseason game week and a regular season game week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, in the preseason, we're in camp right now and we're grinding away every day. We're putting in new things, trying out stuff. We're going against our offense every day. So where it's really, like you said, all about focusing on our execution, just our guys getting better. And then, like, I think you kind of hit it on the head with, once you get into a game week, it's all matchup based and based off what the other team's trying to do. So definitely need a lot more film study, less on yourself. Like right now, we're doing a lot more self-scout, looking at what we do, what works, what doesn't work, what we need to do better. Once we get to a game week, it's all focused on what that other team's trying to do, how they do it, what we think they might do, how we're going to combat that. And so it's a lot more study on the opponent rather than self-scout like it is right now.
Our exposure to Aziz has been great. His energy and personality is a terrific addition. What's it like lining up next to him, and how much can you feed off of what he brings as the green dot guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a blast playing with Aziz. I've loved getting to know him and getting to play next to him a little bit. But obviously, him coming over from San Francisco, where they play really good defense for the past few years, really great linebacker play. He's been a great veteran leadership presence for us. He's, I feel like he brings a really good calming, older presence in our room to kind of get guys to settle down. But then also, if you've been at practice, you've seen him out there on the field, he can definitely bring the juice too, bring some energy. So being able to find that balance and try to feed off his energy that way and kind of follow his leadership has been really cool.
Titans second-year linebacker Jack Gibbons. We've asked a ton of questions. Do you want to ask him how many five-year-olds would it take to tackle Derrick Henry, Paul?
Yeah, I don't think I asked you that when I was working on that story.
One.
What is your number for five-year-olds it would take to take down Derrick Henry?
Josh, I don't know. Too many.
Oh, what a way to cap it. Have you tackled Derrick Henry to the ground, by the way, Jack?
No, not at – they don't let us do that. At,
not even accidentally.
No, I try to protect each other at practice, not take guys to the ground. But, we haven't had that opportunity yet.
All right, Jack. Hey, thanks for being a good sport. Great talking to you. Good luck rest of the way, and we'll see you Saturday in Chicago.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jack Gibbons, Titans linebacker.
Or John Gibbons, as Rex Rudd likes to call him.
Yeah, well, you also needed 30 seconds to come up with Tajay Spears' name. So, you know, we all have our things. We'll react to John and Jack. Coming up, Max, Robbie, and Rex, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And I know it's about getting each other work, but what is your perspective on that? I mean, would you agree with that? Do you feel like you are handling the offense? Do you feel like you're helping them improve? What's your perspective on, like, the work that you guys are getting and who's winning each day?
I feel like we've had great competition throughout camp, just kind of going back and forth. We may put together a good period, and then they'll come back and get us the next period. So I think it's been great competition. We've got great players up and down the roster on both sides, so it's been really good to compete against each other, and I feel like we're just making each other better. But, yeah, I think it's been a really competitive camp so far.
That was Jack Gibbons, Titans linebacker, answering a question. Thanks, Nick, for coming in with my meandering word salad question.
I thought you should have used the John Gibbons reference.
Yeah, that's at least you didn't come in with me calling him John. That's true. But hey, let's not forget. You're like, hey, so Jack, tell me about
Hey, I've got dementia.
Tajay Sharp.
I've got dementia in my fam.
Stop. Oh, now, okay.
I do. I think you should be a little bit more delicate about that.
Unbelievable. All right, tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball today at 6:05 p.m. 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Indianapolis Indians, AAA affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Sounds Baseball, 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Of course, I'm Joe Rexroad. Nick Keyser producing. Paul Kaharski in for our newest father, Robbie Stanley.
Nashville Grass 365 is kind enough to sponsor my team here. For a playground or a high-traffic area, their sealed turf, superior synthetic grass is a perfect solution. Just go to nashville.grass365.com to find more details.
And talking preseason, I asked Jack, not John, Gibbons, about whether he's playing. I didn't necessarily. It would have been amazing. Like, oh, yeah, they told me I'm going to actually play the first three series and Aziz and, you know, this. But Jeff will sit, you know. Yeah, I didn't think we'd get an answer. He doesn't know. It's interesting how that goes with coaches. Kind of, we'll tell you at the very last second. I mean, Simmons the other day is like, I have no idea if I'm going to Chicago or not.
I like Vrabel's strategy here. It's annoying to fans and to media, but he doesn't want any guys like turning, you know, easing up on the
tuning
gas pedal and tuning out.
Right.
And so nobody knows really until, you know, locker room. And I think virtually everyone will travel, unless you're dinged up. And I think there's a logical explanation there. That's not just I'm being, you know,
difficult
with you guys and not telling you. And so, you know, I don't expect Joe to see Tannehill.
Would you, Simmons. Should he though? Should he play? Who would you play? If you were in charge right now, looking at this team, knowing how the openers have gone the last years, whether that's relevant or not. All the information you have, you're in charge. Who's playing in this game?
I want to see the offensive line. And I think the offensive line needs some game time. But I don't think Tannehill needs to be behind the offensive line. I think you let
– I agree with
that. And I would think Malik Willis on seniority gets the first start. The question to me, I think Tannehill probably doesn't play the preseason.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, then who gets the third start? You know, if you go Levis in this one, and then if you go to your rookie quarterback in the next one, and you split that, then how do you divide the third one? And that's going to get read into big time.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be your number two quarterback.
Maybe, but, I mean, you could also look at that like just alternating, right? I mean, you start Willis, start Levis, start Willis.
I would start Willis this game, Levis the next game, and then see how it goes. But, Willis based on seniority, really.
Sure. I'm just saying it wouldn't necessarily be worth reading into if you went back. If you did that, then you went back to Willis as the starter of the third game. First of all, the third game is, you know, it's like, please end the game now. You know, can you do a running clock? I mean, like,
yeah, I mean, they
no
extended the cut
anyone.
Deadline to after that game so that they could basically use up a bunch of bodies and then dismiss them 2 days later.
Exactly. So you can quote unquote put on a game, but a game that, you know, there's some evaluation still left with some of the bottom of the roster. But so, okay, I'm with you. Offensive line. I actually argued this with Jared yesterday, who...
No, you can't play the offensive line.
No, actually, no. No, he actually said he'd play everybody. He wants the whole offense, the starting offense to play. There are other teams. I will say there are other teams out there. There's more...
Starting quarterbacks are starting.
I am seeing a lot more. Yep, the starting quarterback is going to go. Now, how much? I don't know. But still, that's a change. That's a little bit of a change in the positive direction for me, at least in terms of games being interesting. I wouldn't play Tannehill, wouldn't play Henry. I wouldn't play Hopkins. I would play Chig because I think Chig this year is going to have a huge role, and he's going to have to do everything well, and I say all reps he can get. I mean, you can't.
Like, I would play him, too, to get a little of the live blocking that you wrote about.
Burks is close because I think Burks. There's value in him, but also you just can't get him hurt. And, look, it is true, and again, I'll give Jared credit. It's an obvious point, but, hey, sometimes those are tough for him. Look.
Yeah, I'm not giving him credit for obvious points.
You can
because
get
they're
hurt.
Tough for him.
You can get hurt in practice just as easily.
Not just as easily. No, you're not tackling.
And you're right. But what are the worst injuries? The worst injuries are the non-contact strange plant. And the ACL's gone. It happened to Landry last year, right? That has nothing to do with tackling to the ground.
Right. But where are you more likely to tear an ACL? In a game or in practice? In a game.
But most ACLs, and I do not have the stats to back me up, but I'm going to go ahead and just declare it anyway. Most ACLs are non-contact injuries.
I would say so, having had that surgery, yes.
Thank you, Nick. I think that's true. You disagree with me?
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to have a medical argument now. But a lot of them are, right? I mean,
yeah, there are.
It's that awkward plant on the court, on the field, and it has nothing to do with whether you're in a game or not. Yes, look, I agree. The difference is that in a preseason game, your quarterback gets tackled. Your quarterback can get rolled up on, whatever, and all your guys are getting tackled to the ground. That is the difference between this and the joint practices and any practice. So from that perspective, you're right. But the severe injuries often are non-contact. That's all I'm saying.
Defensively, what would we want to see?
I would certainly not play Simmons. I would
not Autry.
Not play Autry, Simmons, Byard, Hooker. I
don't think Hooker because of his propensity for getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm probably not playing Fulton. I think I would play. I think I'd play the linebackers, the inside linebackers, Gibbons, who we just talked to, and Azeez Al-Shaair. I think I would maybe give them a couple series, get a lot of look at. Guys, you're going to see a
Weaver,
lot of Weaver.
You're going to see a lot of Weaver.
But like PV and, you know, I think Tart has been a little banged up, so I don't know if he'd even be available. Like you're going to see Naquan Jones. Some of those guys have been a little bit banged up front. That's right. I mean, a little bit of missed time that tells me it's not just days off. Most of the defense I'm not playing. I know they're good.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. We're not going to see a ton of defense.
This game is about Willis and Levis. And how they handle
and
everything
look, no matter
situationally.
No matter who is on the field with Willis and Levis, we can judge Willis and Levis.
Sure, there's some
decision-making
yeah.
and throws. No matter who's on the end of the throws, no matter how open they are, look, Willis needs to throw the ball. You know,
right.
read,
ball needs
read
to come
a play out,
out
and
right.
throw the ball. That's a big deal right there. Sounds silly. but it was a big issue last year.
No doubt.
Well beyond the preseason.
Progressions.
And
quick.
And I think Levis has started to separate himself with his work in 2 minute and his work in the red zone. Situational stuff.
I wrote he's gaining. Will you agree with that?
I agree.
He's gaining. So
because of that, situational stuff is coming to play. And Vrabel said something early about, you know, the high percentage of football that qualifies as situational. So if you're gaining because of the situational stuff, you're gaining overall. I mean, it's not like 2 minutes over here and it's a small thing, or red zones over here and it's a small thing. Those are big, big chunks of what the Titans do and what everybody does. And so if he's good at those, you know, he's good. And he's gotten better.
Yeah. No, I agree. Look, it's going to be – I'm going to try to take detailed notes on every single person on the field with both of them, because we're going to talk about who's starting, but also when it's all over, who played with who? Who played with the twos, the threes? How long were the twos offensive line out there? You know, what about – who's throwing to who, right? That stuff. Also, who they played against. Are they playing? Yeah, are they going to play against any legitimate – NFL starting caliber defensive players.
I tweeted out the Chicago depth chart this week for people to at home. You know, you might want to go so far as to print that out and have it while you're watching on TV to be able to refer. Now, that gets all mismatched.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
That sounds all mismatched, but you know, I'll certainly watch it that way. And the preseason, you know, if you're in the press box, you know, I'd certainly link up with the beat writer from Chicago and say, hey, who, you know, you consider this twos, you consider this threes, are there any ones out there?
Thanks for the advice.
No, I'm saying that's what we do.
So obviously the quarterback situation, obviously the kickers, how they deploy them, very interesting. I mean, those are the two big things, right? I guess, like you said, I'm with you. The offensive line needs work, man. They need work badly. Let's take those three. What would be the next most interesting thing to you that you're looking at in this game? I know that you do often off these preseason games, you do a lot of special teams analysis, right, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, I try to look carefully at the tape and see who's out there on high-ranking special teams.
Like who's gunning? I mean, because that has a lot to do with the receiver room and how that's going to shake out.
Yeah, receivers to me is next. You know, in this podcast I have coming out, I look carefully at a couple of receivers. I think Robertson is an interesting guy to me now because I think he's shined some, but I think it's all been really with as a third team guy, you know? So if Levis is the two, can he's going to play. Look, Tannehill, we think is not going to play. If he does play, he's going to play very little. So, these receivers who have been working primarily with Will Levis are going to get more work with Malik Willis. That's a little bit of a upgrade. They're going to work against probably better defensive backs, Chicago's twos instead of Tennessee's threes. These are all slight differences, but they're differences, you know. And somebody's going to come out of it with way too much hype because he catches six balls for 80 yards and a touchdown or whatever. But we do need to see them in a different setting. And with the lights on and all of that, it's something more.
It adds something to it, no doubt about it. And there's value placed in it by coaches. Wes in Clarksville on text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. Don't you think it'd be better to have more conditioning? Okay, play preseason game to prevent future injury. Instead of taking it easy until week one, it seems like it'd be better to play and get in game shape. Yeah, game shape. Doesn't, you know, even if starters are playing, they're going to play a couple series. Game shape, and it's a little different than, like, game shape in, like, basketball or soccer, right? You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you have a lot of breaks in football. So I don't think you're preventing future injury by playing in a preseason game. Like, that's a daily routine.
Callus. They talked about
right,
the callus
blister. The three preseason games aren't really building the callus. The daily work is. Agree?
Yes. And those guys will, if they don't get, you know, a big workout in on Saturday, they will have had a big workout on Friday. And they'll run again, you know, on Sunday. Or believe me, they've got it scheduled that conditioning will be taken care of.
You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. It's a beautiful site, too. Let me tell you something. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Coming up next, the Rex Rant. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
But I do not think it's as simple as, oh, I just thought it one day and I decided that's what was deserved and earned.
The thing is, I can't keep going to, this is one of the dumbest things you've said. Like, I mean, I can only say that so many times. But my God, this is one of the dumbest things
you've ever said. You compared Stetson Bennett to Kirk Cousins today.
Right. I mean, you can change the subject all you want.
I'm not changing it, but you can't say that I'm that dumb when you're saying dumber things in the same day.
You just said that you can promise that Vrabel didn't just say, gee, I have a coach I really like who also, by the way, I made assistant head coach in the offseason, and I'd like to give him this opportunity. That you can promise that's not it. It's got to be a conspiracy, Jared.
Oh, boy. Well, that was yesterday's Jared versus Joe, which was won by me. Honestly, Caroline Fenton, who will be on next hour. Like, if Caroline Fenton didn't give me the win there, I think we would have had to have, like, an appeals process.
Do you ever lose?
Yeah, I do.
Well, that's embarrassment.
Because like, it's a competition. I mean, I can't speak for Caroline. But, like, if I was in her position of having to judge this thing, I'd probably, even though I don't think Jared's ever legitimately won a sports argument, I think you got to give him some wins, right?
No.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm going to save my prevailing thing here because I don't want to give away something that he could go look up and study.
Oh, you got. Oh, so you're already preparing for Jared tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't know why I'm inviting more of this because, see, when I have Jared versus Joe's like yesterday, and like my wife will sometimes say, like, dude, what's wrong with you? You all right, man? Like, you should hear yourself. Like, if I'm in the house and I can hear what you're doing, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, God, you're right. It's so embarrassing. I hate when I get all fired up. And yet I'm inviting today because I feel like you and I have been getting along pretty well, but I've got a grievance with you that I think I need to bring for the rant. So this is like
I'm surprised by this. I thought you were going more stilly based on that.
Well, we got plenty of stilly. We got stilly tomorrow. Stop making me say stilly. There's one grievance. I don't want to call
stick.
Him stilly.
That needs to stick.
It's only sticking when Stilly and Paulie, my vision for sports talk greatness, finally materialized. When that happens, I'll call him stilly every time.
I mean, I think airtime should be taken away when he comes up with this nonsense.
Right.
Because that's all he lives for is the oxygen of the air.
All right. Well, listen, this is what I want to say to you. Now, we've argued about this, but I want to bring it to the air. You need to apologize for what the way you treated Jason Wolf. I've got him on the line right here. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have him on the line. That would be amazing. I wish I would have thought of that and have you and Jason Wolf here. I loved your previous show. I forget what station it was at, whatever, but I loved the show. It was a great show, you and Chad and Jonathan. But you guys and that whole Jason Wolf thing, basically, like, you were like Biff in Back to the Future, and like they were like the guys, like, kind of, and then like Marty McFly dumps manure on you guys. I know I'm making Jason Wolf Marty McFly in this scenario. It was so infantile.
This is the best
so
you have
childish.
To go back this
yeah,
far?
It was so childish and infantile. It's some of the most childish crap I've ever heard. And like people were like, oh, yeah, so great. Like, now this is so beneath Paul.
Jason
so
Wolf,
beneath Paul.
Jason Wolf was horrific at his job, for starters.
He was what?
Horrific.
Horrific.
At his job.
He's horrific
a good writer,
at his job.
A good writer, a terrible reporter. He pretended to break the John Robinson GM story, which he did not break.
Okay, but hold on.
So that's a lie. So he's a reporter lying.
No.
Which is a terrible lie.
Hold on. But with that thought, Nick just asked me, like, what he doesn't know what we're talking about, so probably a lot of people don't. Jason Wolf was my former coworker at the Tennessean. Kaharski had a daily, like, just, it seemed daily, just annihilating him on the air. Finally, they had a screaming matchup camp. I mean, it was very entertaining.
Where he called my boss and tried to get me in trouble instead of manning up and coming to my face, which is how I operate.
But you know, that's a serious
I hash things out with people to their face.
Okay, but that's a serious allegation you just made about him. What, based on what?
He bragged. He said, I made them promise that they would give me a banner hanging off the Tennessean building if I got the GM scoop. Then somebody national tweeted that John Robinson got the job. Jason Wolf tweeted very quickly after that, not with enough time to get confirmation of that report.
Yeah, that's your speculation.
Okay, that's fine.
That's your speculation. So don't state it as fact. That's
maybe
your speculation.
Maybe he confirmed it in 20 seconds that John Robinson got the job. But if you tweet it 20 seconds after somebody nationally, and I don't know that it was 20 seconds, if you tweet it that quickly after somebody else tweets it, I'm sorry, you don't scoop that person. The first person that tweets it gets the scoop. Somebody else got the scoop. You can't walk around pounding your chest saying you got the scoop.
That's
not how it works.
Okay. This was before I got here. I got here shortly after that. But, again, when it comes to something like that, confirming something, you know how it is. Like, confirming something can
be. It's not getting a scoop.
No. But you're. I thought you were saying he didn't even have a source to confirm it to him.
Well, maybe he had a source to confirm it. But confirming it is not scooping it.
That's fine.
He was known in town as Can Confirm. He regularly tweeted he could confirm things, which is not being a great reporter if you're claiming that you get scoops.
Okay.
He scooped nothing. Scooped
nothing. So he never broke any stories the entire time.
He might have broken a guy had a fractured toenail or something.
Okay. So, again.
He was a bad reporter. He had no tact in terms of being the guy who followed Jim Wyatt.
Well, the guy who follows Jim Wyatt,
is in a terrible situation, a bad spot. But you've got to come in
tough.
With some delicateness and some tact, and he had none.
He was much better than you. If people believed you on the air talking
everyone
about him
in town,
he was completely incompetent according to your
media
your analysis.
Disliked him. One person in the media corps.
I didn't
corps,
dislike him.
Well, you were his colleague. You had no choice.
I still like him.
Everyone in the media corps.
Don't speak for me.
Okay, everyone in the media corps who didn't work for the Tennessean disliked the guy.
That's
one
not true.
One person in the
everybody.
Media corps.
Do I have to go poll everybody?
Go,
that's not
go
true.
Go ahead and poll. One person in the media corps speaks honestly about everybody in the media corps. That's me.
Okay.
So I'm unashamed that I talked about Jason Wolf. When the building came down.
You were inaccurate. The problem.
I was nowhere near as inaccurate as Jason Wolf was about the Titans. When the building came down, the Tennessean foolishly left the banners in the building.
And so we had fun
getting the banner from the building. Did we light it on fire? Did we urinate on it? No. Did we joke about doing those things? Yes, and we had a big time.
Yeah,
if Jason Wolf wanted the banner, which he did, he should have plotted to get the banner. Guess who was smart enough to plot to get the banner? The Midday 180. We were smart enough to plot to get the banner. And those guys, as a gift to me, one day took me outside and unfurling the Jason Wolf banner, which we had talked about fantasizing about for a long
fantasizing.
Time.
Fantasizing.
Well, we thought, wouldn't it be funny if we could get the banner from the Tennessean, which Gannett, a big corporation with the Tennessean owning 1100 Broadway, didn't give a damn about. Left Jason Wolf's banner rolled up to be garbage, and guess who was smart enough to go get the garbage out of the building? We were.
Childish crap. You got to go to practice. This is a good way to end this show.
It was genius by us. The guy's a tool. He didn't last at the second place.
Genius
he
or childish
he's
crap?
He's at a third place now.
Well, he's done very good work. But
he writes well.
All right.
Doesn't report well.
All right, go to practice. When we come back,
see
Lisa
ya.
Walker.
Don't lock the box. Do lock your locks.
Robbie Rex, 125-106 through the game.